This is Cave Scott Allen of OTCO.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Hello and welcome to Herding Code. This episode is being recorded February 19, 2013, and we are at the MVP Summit, and we are talking to Nick Molnar and Anthony Vanderhorn of the Glimpse Project. We talked to you guys, I think, about a year ago about Glimpse when it first came out. And so for those who haven't heard, they should listen to that show. But what's the quick overview? What is Glimpse?
Glimpse is a web diagnostics and debugging framework for ASP.NET. We like to compare it to Firebug or the F12 developer tools in your browser. So instead of showing you information about JavaScript and CSS and HTML and other client-side concerns, we'll show you information about the concerns that are on the server, such as your routes, your action filters, or other MVC things that you'll care about.
Okay. Yeah, I think the other thing there is that instead of looking at like the breakpoint level or, you know, what your CSS is or whatever else is equivalent on the server, we're sitting inside the frameworks. And so what we try to do is give a framework perspective of what's going on. Hence concepts like routes or model binding, or if we were doing Knockout.js, binding within Knockout.js or that sort of stuff.
Okay. All right, so let's start with what is new with Glimpse since we last talked.
Since we last talked, we've had a couple of big things. Probably the biggest thing is that we got a phone call about 9 months ago from a company in England named Redgate Software, and they called us and said, hey, we absolutely love Glimpse, and we don't think that it's moving quickly enough. How can we be involved? And so we explained to them that Glimpse was a side project for us. We both need to feed our families, and so they offered to sponsor development of the project. So for the last 9 months, Anthony and I have got to be heads down on the project 40 hours a week, just really cranking out to get a 1.0 release. So that's kind of, from a project management standpoint, new and big.
Okay, so just, you know, the question that needs to be asked, then you're being sponsored for this, it's still open source, anything change with that?
I'm glad you asked. No, it's completely open source still. It's still Apache 2. It's not going to change. Everything is still up on GitHub. Nothing has really changed except for the fact that you should see us being more responsive to any issues or feature requests or pull requests or anything like that. Things should just be better for everyone.
Okay.
So is that possible?
How can we know?
Not when Kuhn's in the room. I don't think it is.
And from a technical perspective, probably, 18 months ago now, or not that long ago, but we got a request from Glenn Block from within Microsoft. And at the time, he was on the Web API team, and they wanted, he was talking about the possibility of getting Glimpse up and running with Web API. And he said, but there's a problem. You're dependent on system.web. And back when we started Glimpse, it was like, being dependent on system.web? Who would have thought that was a bad idea?
Right.
And so with the whole OWIN movement, which is about, you know, getting ASP.NET decoupled from, you know, IIS and seeing what we can do there, we decided to, you know, decouple ourselves from system.web. And that wasn't a minor task for us. And we took the opportunity to, you know, improve a lot of things along the way.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So those are some technical things. New release on the way.
Yeah.
So what are some features we're talking about that you guys have been up to?
So for the most part, we're at feature parity of what you've seen in beta. We have small feature improvements. Our extensibility model is much improved for people who want to create plugins and add additional features. We actually have had some third-party contributions that will be coming out when we release later today, like support for SignalR, which we're very excited about, contributed by the community, as well as Scott's helping us up to get our EF project up and running a little bit better. So that's really cool. We've also just done some refactoring. So routes used to be tied right into our MVC package, so you couldn't use it in web forms. Mm-hmm. We've moved that over from web forms. We have much better support for routing, and now we tap into route constraints, so we can tell you if a route didn't match, why it didn't match, because we know which constraints failed. Those are the nice little things that have kind of changed. You won't see a lot. What this allows us to do is it gives us the runway to really start moving quickly now to pump out new features. So we're looking at a roadmap. It's not completely set right now, but our high priorities are things like MVC4 support, getting particularly task-based async working, which our MVC package doesn't support right now. Mm-hmm. System web optimizations. We really want to help people out with their bundling and minification configuration. And as Anthony mentioned, Web API is a big one for us to look at.
And I think coming forward in the future, the idea that we've wanted to go towards is getting probably fortnightly releases going. And to date, because we've had this looming over us of this abstraction from system.web, that's been really hard to achieve because it was such a big unit of work. And maybe in retrospect, we could have done that a bit differently. But from now on in, I really like the thought of sitting down at the beginning of 2 weeks and saying, hey, what three features would we like to complete this in this 2 weeks and get out? And, you know, they don't have to be massive features, but all the time, you know, our users will be getting new and improved features and, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, I like the idea of being much more responsive. And so a lot of what we've been doing is trying to set ourselves up for that.
So one thing I've personally been interested in is MVC4 support. You mentioned that really like the main thing that's remaining on that is the asynchronous task base is asynchronous. Is there any support? Does it work at all? Or is it something where we're just kind of waiting on that?
So if you take our MVC3 package today and you run it on an MVC4 project, as long as you're not using task base async, everything's going to work that you would expect from Glimpse today. So we're only missing new functionality, which there wasn't a ton in MVC4, right? Mm-hmm. They made async much better. They added system web optimization and they bolted web API onto that.
Yeah.
So those are the things that we don't support. If you're doing all synchronous or using old school async controller to do asynchronous actions, we'll support you.
Okay.
Yeah. And so above and beyond that, some of the new stuff coming in the next release, is much more improved, update notifications. So because of the release cadence that we want to have, letting our users know when a new release is out is really important. And it's not like we're, from an end user perspective, it's not like we're a framework where continually updating, you know, this new, our NuGet package might be a bad thing because we're a tool. For the most part, you should be able to keep up to date fairly happily. So letting our users know when and where that happens has been really important for us. And fortunately, because Glimpse has actually got a UI, within the UI, we can actually put a notification that says, hey, look, a release is available. And when we started thinking about this problem space, it opened up a lot of possibilities because we're thinking about, you know, well, if we can tell someone that an update is available, can we tell them which packages in the Glimpse ecosystem have updates available? If we can detect that, how would we detect, you know, what release notes are available for those? Or how would we tell people whether it's worth their while for upgrading? Because we don't want to have to force people to do that.
Right.
And so then we started diving deep into the bowels of, you know, NuGet and how that's all put together to see how far could we actually push NuGet to start getting this sort of information out.
Okay. And you've told me that that's presented some interesting challenges, what you can get, what information you can get from NuGet, et cetera.
Yeah. So for us, NuGet doesn't really have the concept of an upgrade. When you upgrade a package, you actually uninstall and reinstall is the way that that happens, which is fine. But for our user base, we're trying to be very specific about what new features are being added or what bugs we've fixed. So we've actually figured out using the extensibility model in NuGet that leverages PowerShell how to detect when we're doing an upgrade, when we're in an upgrade scenario versus just a clean install scenario. And so we can actually present our users, instead of just a plain kind of readme.txt file that is really targeted more about the release, we can use that information about knowing what version of Glimpse you're coming from and what version of Glimpse you're going to generate dynamic HTML readme file that tells you exactly the features that have changed and provide a tutorial. And because it's HTML, we can leverage all that richness. And it's still the exact same experience right in Visual Studio because Visual Studio has a browser built into it, basically. So we can provide videos for getting up and running and show you how to change your configuration and do all that kind of great stuff. As we hear feedback from our community.
Yeah.
Well, you know, one real short side note, but I'm really happy you're using the browser inside of Visual Studio. Mm. I hate it when I install anything, software packages, whatever, and it pops out up a browser window because I abuse my tabs. I have dozens of tabs maybe open. I close my browser and then I install some software and watch it all fire up to life.
Yeah. I'm actually really excited about it because so we work with a designer now who helps us out and the HTML that he's designed looks like Visual Studio 2012.
Wow.
Which means that he doesn't use any color, but,
yeah. Easy for him, right?
but when you open up the tab, it looks like you're in the native experience, which is really great considering that we're just a NuGet package being plugged in. Yeah. It integrates really well. We're very happy with that.
Yeah.
So it's not going to match my Visual Studio hot dog theme?
No.
No, it will not match your hot dog theme.
One day when we figure out how to get into the theming information, exactly. You know, with Visual Studio through PowerShell, we'll see what we can do.
I'm going back to Media Profile.
One day scientists will figure out how to make Scott Kuhn happen. Yeah.
I don't know if it'll involve PowerShell, though.
Hint, I'm not sure. Scotch.
Power scotch.
Yeah, so I think the interesting thing with what Nick was just talking about is that's the experience you get, you know, when you do an initial install or an upgrade. But we've also been looking at the wider ecosystem of how that would happen, or the user experience of how all that would happen. And so within Glimpse, we're actually able to tell you when an upgrade is available. But it's more than just an upgrade available for Glimpse itself. We're actually able to tell you any package that you have installed that depends on Glimpse. We're actually able to tell you if any of those have an update. So for our plugin authors, we also, through the platform, offer a way of them being able to tell their users when updates are available because of the infrastructure that we've put in.
So you're looking at your NuGet package, you're looking at all their dependencies or all their installed packages?
Well, we actually have an extensibility model that if somebody has taken a dependency on us, they can leverage. And it's super simple. You just put an assembly attribute into your package that says, this came from a NuGet package, and here's the package version and name. And so if we see that, we understand which version of a dependent package is installed by the user, and then we can compare that version against the newest version on NuGet.org, and when there's a change, we know that there's an update available.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And we chose to do that because originally we were thinking about walking that hierarchy tree, but that's a very slippery slope. Because if you start getting packages that are removed, okay, that's a lot of complex walking that you've got to do of that graph. Yeah. And at least for me and Nick, the thought of doing that all in PowerShell didn't sound like too much fun.
No.
And so taking that a step further, if we can tell you when a package is updated, we also, as I mentioned earlier, want to tell you whether it's worth your while. Okay. So what we do then is if you click on the, you know, update notification, like it's a little hyperlink in the top of Glimpse, it'll pop open like a light box, you know, and it'll actually show you, here's all the packages that have got updates and then the release notes for each of those packages. Mm-hmm. And between where that package is at on your machine versus what's the latest. Okay.
So this is a key thing you were explaining to us earlier, that you've got this whole concept of semantic release notes. Mm-hmm. And in order for, if I've got version 1.2.3 and you want to upgrade me to 2.0.1, mm-hmm. you're going to tell me what the difference is between those versions, not just for Glimpse, but also those dependent packages as well.
Yeah, because part of the problem we realized early on is that the experience, even though that we're only showing you the release notes between what you've got installed and what's latest, even though that's an improved experience, we didn't think showing like release notes, you know, a block of release notes release, block of release notes release, you know, right. etc. is all that consumable, because let's face it, how often do we read through all of those details? What we actually care about is the most important information that I should know about between the release of that I have and what's out there now. And unfortunately, because release notes are typed, you know, in a like to be able to extract meaning from them, trying to do that is a virtually impossible task. And so
you started by writing up a DTD.
And so we actually did we actually did think about hosting, like, you know, for our plugin authors, they could host their release notes somewhere and that would be in a JSON format and all this sort of stuff. But then we thought that's getting way too complex. We don't think people would do that. And can we pare this back to its simplicity? And then we started thinking about, well, you know, what about Markdown? Okay, because the whole idea of Markdown and the fact that it's designed to be human readable, but from that you can start extracting meaning, i.e. if you see, you know, space dash space, you know, followed by another line of that and whatever else, it extracts meaning that should be an unordered list, okay, versus, you know, what would be an ordered list. And so with that, combined with some inspiration from like todo.txt, where it has a similar format, except it includes some more typed information, like plus, you know, if you have like a list item and at the end of it, you put a plus in like new or plus, you know, whatever else, that's almost the equivalent of a tag. So the thought that we can create something that is a superset, okay, of Markdown, meaning that it is still human readable, okay, and then try and interpret meaning from that, meaning we could have a parser that extract runs over it and creates an object, in our case, you know, like a JSON object, mm-hmm. we can pull out all of this typed information. So we can actually pull out all the releases, then pull out all the summaries from those releases, you know, the actual changes in the new features, what importance those were and all this sort of stuff, and then essentially do a merge, okay, between the release that you're at to what's latest, and then decide, well, how much UI space do we have to show all this information, and then boil it down to there was 50 new features between where you're at and where you and what's latest. Here are the top three, mm-hmm. okay, and there was 30 bug fixes. Here's the top three.
So why pick on Markdown? Not pick on. Why pick Markdown versus Atom Spec or just using plain JSON over the wire?
And just to throw another one in there, I was just thinking package.json, right? That's a popular one for released stuff for node packages.
Or maybe SGML.
Yeah. All right,
we have
answer
to explain
us.
What SGML is now. EBCDIC format, maybe?
I don't think any of those are necessarily a bad idea in and of itself. And I don't think that we've hit on the final version of what this specification could possibly be. We know that some of the constraints that we had is we didn't want to get into weird oddities with like XML namespaces and stuff like that, considering that our first target platform is going to be something embedded in the new spec, mm-hmm. which is what NuGet uses to make packages. So Markdown and plain text, those syntaxes, we liked because we know it will work there. We also know that it would work on basically any release note system that's out there, mm-hmm. because we're talking about this as developers, but if we're realistic, the developers on open source projects, maybe, if we're lucky, are the ones writing release notes. But in bigger organizations like Microsoft or where we work, they have a marketing team that's writing release notes. So doing something like XML or JSON where we're having marketing folks potentially writing this is difficult. We feel like it's already a stretch to ask them to do Markdown,
right.
but it's a much smaller step than something that has a much more difficult syntax. So that's kind of why we ended up at taking those kind of two syntaxes, the todo.txt syntax and the Markdown syntax, putting them together to create our own little DSL, which allows us to be basically the sports center of release notes, right? We can pack everything up into the highlights, and you can see the most important stuff at the top and get into all the details and guts later if you really want to.
And so based off that, we had this concept, you know, of this whole ecosystem experience, and we went up to all of our plugin authors, and we're actually talking to them about that, and universally, everyone was like, yes, we would do this. Because at the moment, not many people know that the new spec actually does support release notes, okay, but you look at the top, you know, 40, 50 packages on NuGet, hardly anyone uses it, you know, and we're theorizing that that's mainly because there's no value to be derived from it, you know, and so if we can find a way of injecting value into it, you know, then people start using it. And for us, even if we can't get the whole developer community, which, let's face it, is fairly ambitious, doing it, in the end of the day, this is an experience we want to offer our users, and the developers we're working with see a lot of value from it. So even if we're the only ones who decide, hey, this is a good idea, we still have a lot of value. And when their release notes show up in NuGet, guess what people will be seeing is Markdown, okay? And Markdown is pretty human readable. Mm-hmm. So it's not like it's going to screw up the NuGet gallery because we're putting JSON blobs inside of the release note part of the spec. And so that's a concept. And so we've been working, you know, on and off on actually trying to propose come up with a spec, like a website, kind of like what the Markdown website is tried to do, as well as come up with at least an initial cut at what a parser would look like, again, to see if there's traction there. And when we probably release this more generally, we'll have like a JavaScript parser for it and a .NET parser for it. And then we'll start using it. And then if the NuGet team's interested or anyone else is interested, you know, all the bits will be open source and all that sort of stuff. And so we can start having a community discussion on this. So.
Another benefit, I just wanted to go back to Scott's question. Another benefit of plain text that's really nice is developers could start to use Markdown in their commit messages for their source control, and they could start to let their source control or their issue tracker help derive those release notes, which I know is kind of a holy grail right now, but even if you do get your source control or issue tracker to kind of generate the list of changes, you're still two or three steps removed from being able to have release notes. If it's just copy and paste and you were using that format all along to say, hey, this is a breaking change that I introduced here, or I finally finished this feature, similar to how you might close an issue by doing, you know, like bang, 1, 2, 3 in, right, in GitHub, we're kind of like trying to like continue that experience. And it's funny, we've said the word experience like 50 times already today, and we kind of feel like NuGet has raised the water level of the experience that developers have leveraging open source libraries. It used to be the pain was just getting our library. That was the pain. That's fixed now. But there's still all these other fringe pains that we are trying to address, right? So release notes is part of that. Understanding what an update does is part of that. Configuration is part of that. And the experience of just, you know, exploring farther beyond just kind of the hello world example of whatever library you're using.
Yeah. Well, and like you're saying, getting that idea ahead of time of what's going to change. If I install this, is this going to run a bunch of PowerShell that's going to break my thing? Is this going to install some other dependent packages?
Am I going to overwrite conControl32?
It's my favorite con control.
Right. SFC/scan now sometimes will fix that.
But that's why you're bald.
Exactly.
Because you know that.
Yeah. But so, you know, getting that kind of look ahead, like what's going to change, that sounds really helpful.
Yeah. The thing that I also like about this is kind of a side benefit, but semantic release notes could act as a checks and balance to semantic versioning. Because now, if you have said that you've introduced a breaking change in your release notes, but you're sitting at version 2.2 and you're following semantic versioning, that's improper. You should probably be at something.0. Yeah. And so that doesn't mean that we're going to be able to break anything or anything like that, but we could envision a world one day, if people were bought into this, where there'd be tooling to kind of say, hey, maybe your version number is wrong and you should change that because you're lying to your customer, or your release notes are off.
Mm-hmm.
Helps bring the developers and the marketing teams together.
I'm going to have to stop putting ASCII art in my commit messages. Is that still going to be supported? No, the markdown just will just blow up.
Just put it in triple backslash, and then it's just a code sample. Okay. You're good to go.
I think because of how far we're pushing NuGet with some of the stuff we've talked about with the first-time install and upgrades and all this sort of stuff, I don't know too many people who are trying to do this sort of stuff with NuGet. We've also rubbed up against, you know, certain pain points with NuGet as well. And, you know, one of the bigger ones we've run into the issue is, and I think there are a few other projects out there that have the same problem, is that when you have like a package.core, okay, so for us, it's glimpse.core, which we have because we're trying to create good abstractions, okay? So anyone else shouldn't have to depend on the MVC package of Glimpse to add, you know, web API, you know, profiling or whatever. And so core doesn't really have all that much functionality, okay? Yet when we look at our NuGet numbers, it's got twice as many downloads as what our MVC package has. Okay.
So the normal scenario you'd expect is I want a profile and I want Glimpse and I want MVC. Mm-hmm. I'd install the MVC package. The dependency is the core and it'll pull both in.
Yes.
Now so you should expect to see a lot. You should, this number should be the same, basically.
Yeah, roughly the same. And, sure, there's probably some fringe people who are developing internal plugins and they don't want the MVC stuff. So they just want core. But, you know, I don't think that represents half our user base. Mm-hmm. And so what's happening, I think, is that people hear about Glimpse in our case, and they go, wow, you know, we want to go off and get it. They do a search, you know, through Visual Studio, and they type in Glimpse, and they see the Glimpse package, and they click download, and they're like, where's Glimpse? You know, nothing's showing up, you know. Oh, it's another broken open source package or, you know, whatever else. When we're just trying to follow, be good citizens of the ecosystem and follow the conventions there. And, you know, yet this experience is broken. Now, we have tossed around different ideas about how we can fix this. And we think, you know, a fairly soft approach to fixing that is like the HTML page that will show people when they first time run and stuff like this, that will try and educate them to that. But, you know, interesting thoughts that we've had is what happens if they installed Glimpse and we detected they didn't install it via, you know, MVC or whatever else. And we looked at every other package that they had in their solution, okay, or that they were dependent on. Then we looked at the intersection between those packages and any other packages that depend on Glimpse. So concretely, if they've got in Hibernate, okay, and we see that they've got in Hibernate, We then look and see, is there any other package that depends on both Glimpse and in Hibernate? Okay. And do that for, you know, all the packages that they've got installed. And with that, then what we could do is go off and download those packages for them. Mm-hmm. Now, between me and Nick, we've debated a lot about, you know, what the acceptance from the development community would be of going off and downloading these packages, which, you know, the argument for is that we already go off and download packages when a package is dependent on another package. So maybe that's not such a big deal. But, you know, it would be really cool if, you know, instead of just forcing this on people, we could say, well, hey, look, you've installed Glimpse. You've got these other packages installed. Are you interested in any of these other packages? So in order to try and fix this MVC problem, they would see, I'm dependent on, you know, ASP.NET, MVC, or whatever the package name is for MVC. And it would go, right, here's glimpse.mvc. Are you interested in that package? And they could go, oh yeah, you know, click on that and, you know, also get it to download.
Right. So the only downside I could think of would be for the tinfoil hat wearers who would be really concerned that you're scanning my solution and looking to see what I'm doing. How do I know you're not stealing my IP or reporting what I'm using off to some marketing firm so that they can call me up and try to sell me in Hibernate or Redgate software or something? Not that you guys would do that. That's just I could see happening.
Yeah, and that's exactly the debates we've had. We know that this is a problem, and we think the experience could and should be better. That's a bit of a harebrained idea, but it's kind of the only automated idea that we really have right now, besides, hey, we'll scan Stack Overflow. When the 80 millionth person says, I installed Glimpse and I don't see this tab, what do I do? And we're like, go install the right package.
Right.
Do you
even have, like, in your description, glimpse.core description, you don't want this plugin?
Yes.
Install that.
Nobody reads that. And to be fair, the people who are using Glimpse are popping open the UI in Visual Studio, and that text is pretty small.
Mm-hmm.
It's maybe 10% of the entire NuGet UI, and so it's very easy to kind of just gloss over what that text says, especially when you listen to Herding Code and you know, oh, Glimpse is awesome, let me just go and download it. Right? So you're like, well, I don't even need to read this.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go and search Glimpse. Yeah.
And to be fair, the NuGet spec does have, you know, or even if it doesn't already, they could put in, you know, the concept of hidden packages and stuff like that, but we don't really want that either, because
you want that Glimpse core to be available. Right?
Yeah, yes. We want the core to be available. And it also acts as a focal point, you know. So, you know, if I had it my way, perhaps we wouldn't even see the other packages. We would only see Glimpse. You know, now whether or not that's a good idea, I'm not sure yet. But, you know.
Yeah, you could put core on, like, a MyGet server and then just put the main package you want people to download on NuGet.
Everybody else would have to have a package source that points to MyGet. Otherwise, it would be an unresolvable dependency.
Mm-hmm. That was another question I was going to ask about, A, the semantic release notes and the dependencies in Glimpse. Have you looked at working with internally hosted NuGet servers from, like, Team City or, you know, the standard NuGet server? And can you do that same kind of reaching out to CO? Because a lot of times we used to run Monorail a lot, and so we'll run into packages that get deprecated and then they're just gone. So we would host them locally so that we could still access them for our builds and whatnot. But I didn't know if you'd done any research or looked into, hey, if I'm making an internal Glimpse package that looks into our CRM system to show what tables we're hitting or whatnot in there. Do people do that? Do they write specific Glimpse plugins?
Yes, we've found a lot of people have been doing that.
We probably have about 25, these are 25 published public packages.
Yeah.
And so we've heard from our users that they have custom ones that help them with their e-commerce, their shopping cart, so they can see, what's being placed into the session, of their cart. But I think that's all kind of stuff for those developers to figure out. We've tried to help them, and so we leverage MyGet quite a bit, MyGet.org. And so we actually, every night, if our build isn't broken, which it's not most of the time, we actually publish a nightly. Every time we release a new milestone, we publish a milestone release. These are all to MyGet. We also have a community feed on MyGet that's an open feed that anybody can publish to. And the purpose of that is for all of our package authors who are working against our pre-release versions, they have a place that they can put up their stuff and all their dependencies will resolve automatically because it's all together on MyGet. Because MyGet, you can actually point two sources together and say that this dependency can cross over to that package feed. It's actually quite cool. NuGet.org does not have that feature. So we've tried to help our community a little bit there, but they still kind of need to take the initiative to leverage those kinds of things.
That's why I was kind of thinking of just internally hosted stuff. Do you still have that same? So if I write a plugin for Glimpse that's specific to my org and I host it on my org systems behind our firewall, is it configurable? Will it look at the NuGet sources, I guess, when it's going out looking for the release note?
Yes.
Metadata and whatnot.
Yeah. So what ends up happening is, so if you have local feed, which has your local package, and that has a dependency on Glimpse, you can have Glimpse locally and it'll use the local one if that's the first source that's configured. Otherwise, it will just go through the source list until it finds it. And so everybody obviously has NuGet.org installed by default as one of their source lists. Mm-hmm. But a lot of this stuff with packages, right, we have kind of package explosion. Particularly for us, we have a lot of packages, probably 30 different Glimpse packages. We ship about 5 or 6 of them, but the community ships a bunch more. And so we're always looking at ways to kind of consolidate that down. And one of our pet peeves with NuGet is NuGet will allow you to target a package at a version of the .NET framework. But Microsoft ships many different products that run on multiple versions of the .NET framework. So John, if you're running .NET 4.0 on your machine and you're running MVC, you could be running MVC 3 or you could be running MVC 4.
Right.
And there's no way via NuGet for me to figure that out as a package author.
You were specifically MVC. So MVC 2 mm-hmm. runs on 3.5, I believe.
Well,
just
the 2.0 runtime, right?
2.0 or 3.5. And then 3 runs on 3 and 4.5. And then 4 runs on 4 and 4.5. I messed up. 3 runs on 4 and
3.5. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
It's
exactly
yeah.
what we're pointing out.
You need to draw the truth table.
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry, everybody. I just blasted out your ears.
The core idea would be that the same way that, you know, eventually we'd love to have just a Glimpse package, in the more short-term package, instead of having a Glimpse MVC 2 package, a Glimpse MVC 3 package, and mm-hmm. a Glimpse MVC 4 package, we'd love just to be able to have a Glimpse MVC package. Mm-hmm. Okay. But that's impossible because inside of the NuGet file, which is just a zip file, the only breakdown that it has is at the runtime level. And so it doesn't have a concept of like a logical version or something else that sits above that lets us deal with this issue. And I think it's only going to get worse, unfortunately, because when we start seeing new versions of Web API come out, new versions of Signaler come out, and all this sort of stuff, mm-hmm. none of those are versioning with the .NET runtime. And so if they want to release a new version, okay, which is going to be supported and all this sort of stuff, then chances are they're probably going to make it a separate package full stop. And unfortunately, that causes us a lot of pain because when we release a new feature, like let's say we wanted to show you how big your session was, how many bytes or something like this, and we wanted to release that, and for some reason that was tied up with MVC, then what we would try and do would be to release that feature for MVC 2, MVC 3, and MVC 4. You know, we'd try and handle the pain of figuring out how to do that if it was technically possible. Then we would release a new version of Glimpse, okay, and that would support all of those versions. So even though Microsoft might develop, you know, Signaler 1.0 and fire and forget and never make any more updates to that, and then they move on to the next version, we're still trying to provide support for that version. And so it's now, sort of situation that we're getting into.
Can I ask you, I mean, so you're really working hard on this experience, as you said before, of just install Glimpse and we'll figure things out.
Yeah.
Do you think people would be all that confused or upset by just installing glimpse.mvc2 or glimpse.mvc3? Because they're doing that with a lot of other
Yeah,
packages.
But no, I think that raises a very good point, and that's what I think people should do given the ecosystem that we've got. But it comes back to the download numbers that I mentioned before, where half of our base, or the numbers show that half of the users aren't downloading, they're only downloading core. You know, and when you look at some of these other packages that are out there, like RavenDB has got a core, you know, and several other packages have a core, and you start looking at, you know, well, why has core proportionally got so many more downloads than the others? Maybe something's wrong here. And, you know, that's what we're bumping up against and trying to see if we can find a better experience. And unfortunately, we're trying to work with, you know, oh, that's another broken open source project. Okay. Because if it's something from Microsoft, they're probably going to be like, oh, you know, maybe there's something I've missed or whatever else. Mm-hmm. Whereas we're trying to, you know, see if we can get to the point where, you know, that isn't even a question, you know, of what have I done wrong here? It just works. Mm-hmm.
And what you're pointing out too is that this is a problem you're trying to solve, but this is a problem you would like to not have to solve, right?
Yeah.
You would
yeah.
like this to
because,
be solved.
Because as Scott Kuhn said before, do you trust us to do that right? You know, now we'd obviously put in all due diligence to do it and whatever else. But as he said, how do we know, you know, selling this information to God knows who? And that's a very good point, you know. And, you know, I would honestly prefer not to have to do that work. It doesn't sound like fun work to me. Plus, I've got my own open source project to, you know, contribute to. And so, you know, I do think this is a wider problem. And, you know, and I know NuGet's got a ton on their plate. Like when you look at the possible roadmap of what they're looking at, it's ginormous. But, you know, these are things that, you know, affect the core experience that people have with NuGet. And, you know, it'd be nice to see.
The NuGet folks. I just put a sticky note on their mind map that said, make search more better.
that
would actually help you out a lot.
I think it's interesting because this isn't necessarily a common problem in NuGet. And I can see it growing. We thought we were the only ones that had this problem because of a decision that the MVC team made. The EF team has made the same decision. So now Entity Framework is going to have the same problem for us. And I was talking to some developers here at the summit who are doing Windows 8 development, which I don't do, but they have the same problem with the two different runtimes in Windows 8. And they can't target the right basically right. project.
Right. Well, even, and I'm not, I think that this is the same problem, but if I install a file new MVC4 application, I get a huge bin directory because of all my NuGet packages, because I've got, say, for instance, OData and Entity Framework, which have to target, you know, Silverlight and Windows Phone and everybody else. And so the only specificity is on the runtime. People end up just bundling these huge packages and then you get these enormous NuGet package files. File new project is a giant.
Yeah. And I don't think the future's bleak. I don't think we're trying to say that all is lost. You know, I think this concept of packaging is still very new within the .NET ecosystem. And the fact that, you know, we're moving out of the GAC, for instance, when the GAC was like the savior of DLL hell.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're starting to, you know, move towards a different sort of pain.
Right.
You know, I still think it's a very, very good direction we're moving in. But, you know, it's just, you know, some of these growing pains. So, you know, hopefully we figure out a good solution for.
Now we have per application GAC.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that's kind of some of the problems that we've been trying to solve in trying to provide a good experience. And you know, and fair enough, we are a tool, you know, so I think we have some problems that other people don't, that are creating like Nancy or whatever else. But I do think it is a wider problem than just
us. Do you think it's just specific to the fact that you guys have an ecosystem, so plugins? You think that like Orchard would have the same problem on NuGet or Subtext?
Not the project targeting. That really has nothing to do with our ecosystem. I think some of the things we're trying to do with semantic release notes is accentuated because we have an ecosystem around us. But the version targeting stuff, that's going to kind of stay the same for everybody. The first time install experience, that's going to stay the same if you're a solitary package with nobody depending on you.
Right.
So.
And you know, I think there's always the chicken and the egg thing where if it was easier to do some of these things, people might, for instance, have these ecosystems or plugins or, you know.
And also to be fair, you know, I think we've got to be a little careful as well. And we've been very diligent with this, with the way we've gone about developing some of this first time, you know, install stuff versus update. You know, we don't want a million tabs opening up either, you know. And so I think this is where we've tried to, we just have that for the core package. You know, so we're not going to do it for, you know, if you install glimpse.mvc, which has a dependency on glimpse.asp.net or anything like this, you're not going to get a million pages popping.
Right.
And so this is where I think a little bit of usability smarts can be put into how we solve this problem to try and make sure that we don't, you know, doing this. So.
I think I have proven that it is not possible, people.
You know, it's funny. I do see some, and I prefer the NuGet approach, but I see some people using Visual Studio Installer's V6 to just say, fine, I'm going to make you install a V6, for instance, like SQLite or some other SDKs or things like that. If you want to use them, install our V6 and we'll set things up for you. I don't like that because then you go through their thing to add tooling or whatever. But I prefer NuGet if it works.
Those are usually extensions for Visual Studio, right?
Yeah.
Like the Web Essentials, stuff like that.
Yeah. I have a bone to pick about that, actually.
Go ahead.
Extensions. This is kind of an abrupt change in topic. But so we have something like Web Platform Installer, which isn't perfect, but it's good. And I know there's a lot of work in the community now around things like Chocolaty and stuff like that. Stuff to get your box set up, right?
Right.
So we have that with Web web platform installer. So I was a consultant for 5 years before doing full-time open source. And so every 6 months, I'd have a new team of developers that may or may not have ever done web development before. So I'd go into web platform installer, I'd generate a custom hyperlink, mm-hmm. and I'd email it to my entire team. I said, click this and install everything that you need on your box. Awesome. So now their box is set up all the way kind of on the left-hand side. I'll create a package config file and I'll check it into source control. And when they download source and build, all of the runtime libraries that we want in the project are set up for them. Awesome. All the way on the right-hand side, we have runtime. But in the middle, any tooling that we require, I have no way of doing an automatic download. I need an extensions.config file that keeps track of all of that. Because, and you just think, oh, well, who cares? That's just tooling. Well, if the developer is on Visual Studio 2010 and doesn't have NuGet installed, he downloads source and can't even build because he's missing all the libs that he needs. Or if we're using something like MAD's Web Essentials and we're compiling less and we require, that's part of our workflow, that the less is compiled to CSS and that CSS file is there. If he doesn't have that extension, the project doesn't work for him. So I feel like we have the left-hand side done, we need to have the right-hand side done. We need something in the middle to make sure that our design point. Experience is set up and ready to go.
Well, remember back when you could, if you opened up an MVC project on a machine that hadn't had MVC installed, it said it was an unknown project type?
Yes.
You didn't know what that meant?
And then you Googled around and found that you had this GUID and it was first install.
Yeah. Talking about pain points as well, one of the things we've run into, which has been a big pain in the ass, is Sandcastle.
Is he allowed to say that?
Oh, ish. one of the big problems we've run into is Sandcastle. Okay, yeah. Because we've gone to all the effort of documenting, you know, XML docs, all of our APIs and all this sort of stuff. Yeah. And then when we're trying to create documentation for it, you don't even think about it. Everyone says, yeah, do XML docs and at some later point we'll generate, you know, the documentation. And, you know, at start you look to see, yeah, should it be possible? You know, you find results that say, should it be possible? But then when you look at what you actually need to do it, you know, we just want it to be part of our build process, you know, NuGet sort of style, you know, additional functionality. And to get Sandcastle, which is one of the only tools we have as .NET developers for generating XML docs, is such a huge pain. Huh. Like the amount of they've got an installer for the installer, which goes off and downloads all the dependencies that you need to, you know, run Sandcastle just to generate some, you know, HTML pages from your XML docs. Like, come on. And even the formatting and stuff that overlooks it looks like it was built in the 50s or something. You know?
It's got punch cards.
Might as well be.
So this might be the ignorant question, but did you just find an old version of NDoc laying around? And
so we actually found Sandcastle Help File Builder. It's a project to help you do Sandcastle, which is a very similar experience to NDoc. Yeah. So that's what we're leveraging. But unfortunately, it sits on top of Sandcastle, and Sandcastle has all those dependencies. Forget about just like checking everything you need into source control so your build server can build. No, you gotta like install that crap everywhere.
So maybe a build server for the doc and a build server for the code.
Exactly.
Essentially.
Exactly.
You know, one thing I realized we talked about what's new in Glimpse. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about things you would like to do, potentially not promising anything, you know, but...
Ooh, I know something you guys should do.
Okay.
I should do while I'm here. And I was playing around with this earlier this week, but I haven't started the Glimpse part of it, was a plugin for Fiddler so that you could view the entire scope of the request in the Glimpse tab. And I haven't actually done much with it, but I kind of think, okay, Fiddler's extensible. So, you know, we should be able to just send a message to maybe the server or a Signal R hub or something to send down to Glimpse and maybe have that.
Well, it's really interesting. One of our big realizations we had with Glimpse when we were doing what we were doing and when we realized we tend not to say, you know, anymore that Glimpse is, you know, fiddler for the server, because we've come to this realization that Glimpse is a lot more. Because we sit in the server and we sit in the client, we have a unique ability to be able to start detecting stuff from the moment the user clicks on a hyperlink, you know, because of the new APIs that the browsers have these days, all the way to when the server picks that up, okay? And yes, there is a little bit more missing with the network, which is where some of your stuff would come in. And you get all of the stuff through the server, and then we can pick it up again once it starts coming down from the server, all the way through to DOM ready and beyond, you know? And so that's a fairly unique view that not too many, you know, tools have insights into. And, you know, I think it's a really valuable thing, particularly when you look at the context of all of this in the scope of frameworks, you know, and that idea that every tab, you know, represents a framework and is showing, you know, what that framework has done to help, you know, aid you rather than, you know, just a breakpoint.
I've always described it as Firebug for MVC rather than Fiddler, because it's like that's kind of what the big push was when the Web 2.0 Ajax stuff came about. Firebug was invaluable because you could look and see and have the tabs, and it's the same kind of thing with Glimpse. Yeah. It just took that all that wealth of knowledge and brought it from the server down so you could see it.
Yeah. And I think that's evolved on to where, you know, we're starting to think about Glimpse as like the diagnostics platform for the web, you know, because what Glimpse is at its core is, yes, we ship by default MVC and a couple of other different things, but we think the real value in Glimpse is the platform itself, the delivery mechanism, how it sits, where it sits, the fact that it can work with PHP, you know, and Node.js, and it can run on the client to give you insights into Backbone.js or Knockout or whatever else. Mm-hmm. And instead of it being like just breakpoints or console.logs or whatever else, it's actual intelligence on top of what's actually happening.
And we talked earlier about moving on to the Owen stack. Mm. So then you suddenly expand your ecosystem from ASP.NET MVC to Nancy service stack. You get Web API for free, basically, when that self-hosting on Owen. God, what else? Simple.web, I think they're running on it.
Oh, yeah.
Suddenly all, you know.
That's one of the big reasons why we removed system.web. It was just so that we could get access to all of that stuff and all the innovation that's happening.
Hair for a little bit longer. Right?
That is true. That is true. I'm losing a little bit here, but I'm not.
That one right there, that's HP required. I know.
So one thing that I will mention, since you're talking about Fiddler, one feature that was added in 1.0, very tiny feature and only for the real geeks, is we actually will, by default, you can turn this off, we insert the Glimpse request ID as an HTTP header in the response.
Yep.
And the entire Glimpse server, the client speaks to the server through a hypermedia API. And so in Fiddler, you can see that ID, and then you could, theoretically, go and make a request to the Glimpse server against that request ID and get back all that information.
Well, and that's really important when you're doing network diagnostics, because if you're hitting something like a traffic manager, like a NetScaler or an LTM from F5, you're going to be looking at the X forwarded by, and you're going to be seeing, okay, what's the actual path that's taking through the system? And you can say, oh, okay, well, here I can, you could, in theory, if you tie into Fiddler, you get that into Glimpse as well.
Yeah.
And that goes back to what you were saying, which is that it's not just like, okay, Firebug was on the client. Glimpse is not just on the server. Yeah. It's from beginning to end. It's the entire life cycle.
Yeah. And the fact that we allow that plugin ecosystem is where I think we have a lot of value. Mm-hmm. And the longer we go by, the more we realize how much this platform means, okay, or potentially means. You know, hopefully other people agree. But this is where we start finding that, you know, when we look at all the different frameworks that we'd love to be able to develop diagnostics for, whether it's EF or, you know, SignalR and all this sort of stuff, because trust me, I'm just as much a geek as anyone else. And, you know, given the opportunity to muck around with any of these technologies, it's like, yahoo, you know. But, you know, when we look at the platform itself, we have, you know, all these other realizations, okay, of what's possible there that we could provide for, you know, plugin authors to tap into. So an example of that was a realization we had recently of the fact that we do a really great job of helping people who have a problem. Okay, like something's gone wrong, my routes are not working the way I expect it to, what's actually going on? We do a really good job of helping those people. We do a really good job of helping people who are learning, okay, like how's the route configuration equal, you know, the route table, you know, how is all that going on? And then the other part that we do that we don't do a good job of is everyone else who doesn't fit into those two buckets at a given time, which is basically anyone who, you know, knows what they're doing and, you know, knows their framework and their application.
Right.
So we started sitting down and saying, what could we do to really help those people? Okay. And the realization we came to is that we're collecting all of this information. Okay. And yeah. it's pretty cool information. What happens if we started aggregating that together? Okay. And at the moment we have an icon at the bottom right hand corner of the screen. You click, you know, up pops a glimpse panel, but you need to dive through each one of those tabs to kind of pull out the information.
Right.
So coming back to when the glimpse icon is just a glimpse icon, if we actually extend that to be like a more of a rectangular bar that comes out from there, we could inject this heads up, you know, display information into there, okay, and making it like a little mini dashboard. So just as you're navigating around, you're starting to get feedback, you know, about what's happening. And once you start doing that, it's like, ah, okay, this is really useful. What if I put alerts on top of that? Ah, that could be really cool. So what happens if I could say, we don't want to allow any more than 3 SQL connections for a given page. If it's more than 3 SQL connections, we should be caching. Okay. And so what we could actually do is for any one of these numbers, provide thresholds. So if you go over it, it would go red, making it very easy, you know, for a developer as he's going around, you know, just to see something, you know, flagged at him out of the corner of his eye.
Kind of like page speed or
yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But that be extensible, you know, as well. So we can provide it with, you know, great defaults or what we think are, you know.
But plugins can bubble that stuff up.
Yeah, but plugins can bubble that up, which comes back to what you were saying about, like, if your CMS, you know, if you've got something that's valuable from your CMS that you'd like to pump into there, i.e. calls to, you know, SAP or something like this, mm-hmm. you know, you can put that information in there as well. And so that's the start of us trying to think, how can we help people on an ongoing basis and, you know, make it more valuable with the information we already have at hand.
You know, one thing I was thinking as you're talking about this is being able to trace through the thing, be able to bubble stuff up. Is there anything, have people done plugins to look at security? Like as things are going through, are we hopping from HTTPS over to HTTP for part of the route, or is there unencrypted data or that kind of stuff?
Yeah, we haven't been informed of any plugins that do anything like that. We've talked about it, and we think that it's a great idea. We are not necessarily security experts, and so we kind of feel like for us to go and write a security plugin and be like, this is what you should be doing, and then we tell people the wrong thing. We don't really want to like be the poster child for that.
You know, it's funny. I'm partly that's on my mind because we just saw a really good presentation at MVP Summit from Damien and
NDA.
No, I can at least high level.
You can't tell who did it.
I have to burn the recording. I'm sorry, guys. It was
restart!
Damien and Levi Broderick, and they were talking about don't do this. And a lot of what they were talking about was security things. You should not be enable view state Mac. Don't mess with that. You know, and all these things. It's like you could analyze
exactly.
quite a bit
so
of that.
What I actually said to Nick, you know, because we were sitting there, we should try and get a copy of this slide
yeah.
and provide it, you know, a plugin that actually looks for all of these different settings and different nuances. And if we see someone doing that, it tells them, hey, look, you're doing this. The other thing we've looked at is like, the open
Open
web security
those guys they actually have ASP. Like a checklist of you know things that you can look for. So if and when we get the time, and this is part of the problem I was saying before
yeah.
of the plethora of the things we could do, but the fact that we're only two guys is go ahead and look at these recommendations that come through and try and you know create a plugin that can you know detect these and see where you fall with some of this stuff.
Yeah.
And so we've talked about trying to do that as well. Some of the other stuff we've talked loosely about doing. It's something we're working a little bit with from Code 52 fame, Brendan Forrester, is looking at visualizations. So it's all great that we can show you a routing table or how your model binding or whatever else wired up. And for a lot of people, and that's totally acceptable. But when you've got that learning hat on, just a table of, you know, information isn't really all that useful.
Because it doesn't show – you have to know what to look for. You have to know how to read that table and what's important there.
So what we came up with was we started looking at, you know, well, how could we actually visualize this? And so we started to understand that routes is more of a decision tree, okay, and it's not really a table.
Mm-hmm.
And when we start thinking about it's a decision tree, how would we actually visualize that? And so we started coming up with the concept that, well, what happens if on the server as part of this, we can actually generate an SVG, okay,
mm-hmm.
and send that down to the client, and then the user would actually see like a pretty cool, like almost looks like a subway map, okay, of here's the decision tree. You've got three areas listed. It didn't match any one of those areas. So, you know, the water flowed or the train flowed or whatever down here. And you can see where it breaks off and why it broke off. You would see an X where it didn't go, and it would tell you it didn't go here because it failed that constraint or it didn't match the core pattern or whatever else. And so we started talking about that, and like other stuff when you start thinking about visualizations is stuff like with model binding. Like, wouldn't it be cool if you could actually see the action signature, then coming up above that is like a funnel, mm-hmm. and you'd see like the post and the get and, you know, any of the other bits of information, and you'd actually see where it grabbed information from to build up, you know, the various parts of the model, because it could be a very complex model that you're building up with your model binding. Yep. And so it'd actually show you this made the grandchild and this added to make the child and this added to make the parent, and that was what, you know, helped make the final object that came in. And then you'd actually see, hey, wait, there's this query string parameter that I expected it to be used, but didn't actually get used anywhere, you know, and you'd visually see that.
Right.
And so I think there's this whole unexplored landscape of visualizations that no one's really looked into. And so, you know, we kind of have an opportunity to define a standard with stuff around like some of this visualization. So we're pretty interested about some of that stuff.
That sounds really exciting. As long as you can save that as a PowerPoint file, just email the PowerPoint file to ops, and I think we're good.
That's awesome.
Wow. Well, that's quite a lot of stuff. Is there anything you guys like to talk about in closing?
I think we're pretty good. We are going to try to be a little bit better stewards of our project. One of the things that we've been talking about is some of the problems that we've had, which is with, like, community management. And so we're going to probably start doing...
You guys have problems?
I got one problem, Scott.
I'm not seeing any problems from you.
What we want to start doing is start hosting... maybe monthly, we don't have the cadence down exactly yet, but maybe monthly town hall meetings where we can actually talk to some of our community members.
Wait, see, like a podcast?
We're going to over.
Delete. Competition.
And that's it. That's all we're going to do. We're just going to take over Herding Code. We just want to be able to talk Limpsing to our users.
Code.
Yeah. We want to be able to talk to our users. We want to be able to talk to the people who are making plugins and contributors and start having a little bit more of a conversation there than just fire and forget issues in GitHub.
Okay.
So look for that. We'll have some links on our blog, blog.getglimpse.com.
Okay. Yeah. And if people want to get involved, obviously they could start by installing the package.
Yeah.
They should not get the core. They should get glimpse.mvc, probably, right?
Or glimpse.asp.net.
Okay. And we'll have links in the show notes, of course. And then if people want to get involved, people can help out. This is open source. Yep. What ways can people get involved?
Probably start off with the website, getglimpse.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming you'll include a link in the release notes, in the show notes for this. But we've got a shiny new website, which we're pretty proud of. And so there it'll redirect them through to, you know, how they can help. We're on Twitter. We're pretty responsive there. So if you're interested in something, and we genuinely are interested in trying to help people. You won't get from us, you know, submit a pull request for that. You know, even if we don't have the time directly to do something, we really are interested in helping people, you know, achieve whatever it is that they want to achieve. And so, please get in contact. Let us know, and we really will try and effort to see what we can do.
Be better steward. It's like Natalie Portman complaining because she's ugly.
hey, I guess when you've got a project and you're in your own little world, you start thinking about, well, what could we do better?
Mm-hmm.
And so,
but now that you heard Scott say it's not important, you're just, oh, heck
you're
that.
Done.
Yeah, right. we'll give that up.
Your wallet's too fat for your pants, and your diamond shoes are too tight. Move on.
But you know, like, part of being stewards is, you know, even down to when we did the new website, we've got a section where we call out all of our contributors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we've even got their photo, GitHub, you know, blog, if they've got a blog, you know, stuff like this, because we wouldn't be where we are today without these people. You know, we really want to, you know, make sure we're recognizing those people and stuff like that. You know, so just things like that. We're trying to, you know, be responsible. And we do realize that this is a very interesting time within .NET open source.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a panel discussion about that today.
NDA!
Ooh. And, you know, without going into what was said, yeah, you know,
this is a content-free show, then.
Yeah. you know, I think it is an interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we've come to the realization that we do have a little bit of an ability to set a standard of, you know, what .NET open source projects do. And we'd like to be a part of that.
Great. And so, well, let's wrap up on that note. So thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you, guys. We appreciate it. Thank you for having us on.
All right. We'll talk to you later on Herding Code.
Cheers.